From WGVU Public Media, this is Powerful Women Let's Talk. Conversations with women making an impact in West Michigan. Stay connected to Powerful Women. Please like and subscribe.
This season on Powerful Women, for Women's History Month, we're looking at women who made history in West Michigan, and women, of course, who are making history right now. So today we look at a woman who's made history talking to, well, Joelle and Clary. Clary, you have certainly of your own history. You past president of the Greater Grand Rapids Women's History Council, also a Grand Rapids Women's Historian, here to speak about Emily Burton Ketchum. I'm glad you're here, Joellen.
Thank you, Shelley. It's an honor as always.
Yes. Why have you chosen Emily Burton Ketchum?
You know, for one thing, Emily Burton Ketchum has a place in my heart. I came to Grand Rapids around 1990 and joined the Women's History Council, which was in its childhood then. And I came in because I had known of a woman named Constance Rourke from my professional life. So I got more information about her in Grand Rapids. But in the 1990s, the first woman I was really in hot pursuit of was Emily Burton Ketchum. And she continues in my life. As I have learned more and more and more about the history of women's history, the women's accomplishments over the last 190 years, in 2 years she will have been 190, her effect keeps spiraling out. The energy, the great force that she used during the 19th century put Grand Rapids on the map in terms of suffrage and other women's movements, and she just found a big place in my heart.
You're sharing the teases. Tell us a little bit about her history local to Grand Rapids.
I mentioned how old she would be. Emily Burton Ketchum is related to the Burton family for Burton Avenue, Burton Park, etc. She was one of the first European-American children born here in 1838. Her older brother has sometimes been claimed as the first. So she was here from the start. Emily Burton Ketchum grew up here, went to local schools, St. Mark's Academy and something else, and she ended up going back to New York, Western New York, around Rochester, which is where I think the family came from. And when she was there, she, during the Civil War, she undoubtedly became acquainted with the huge women's movement was there. That's where Susan B. Anthony was spending the Civil War, etc. And then she married a man, Smith G. Ketchum, and moved back to Grand Rapids in 1867, bringing all of those connections with her. So she was from Grand Rapids initially, and then she really became a community builder and women's advocate on the local and state and national stages eventually.
Do we say that she, in her role, would be dubbed as a first wave feminism, her role in this 19th century?
Absolutely. On the cutting edge. First wave feminism really grew out of the abolitionist movement. When early abolitionists like Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who might be a familiar name, realized that they weren't welcome at abolitionist meetings, especially in London. There was a worldwide forum called, and they realized they had problems of their own. She was part of a very famous Tea Party in 1848, which is sometimes dubbed the beginning of American feminism. And this small group of women discussing their problems as women called for a first meeting on women's rights in Seneca Falls, New York, in 1848. And what's considered first wave feminism kept growing out of that. Within 12 years, Emily Burton Ketchum was back in, was in New York. And so you can see how close she was.
Yes.
And the first wave feminists really lasted through what's called the Progressive Era. Sometimes considered, you know, it was pretty much over around World War I, but by 1920, when the night, and there was, we'll talk more about what happened during all that time, but in the 1920s, there was a huge backlash after national suffrage was unable enabled all women to vote in 1920, and then think of the 20th century. Just, I can give you a quick nutshell summary. Women during the late 19th century were getting educations. In the 1890s in Grand Rapids, there were more women physicians than in the 1950s in Grand Rapids.
Well, that's a note to take.
Which is one
the next
reason. Wow. Second wave feminism got feet under itself by the 1970s and really took off again. And so, much of that work had been forgotten.
And so the 1890s were a significant decade for Ketchum and Grand Rapids women?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I might have told you before that I started looking for her before I even knew her name. When I was first involved in the Women's History Council, I heard a rumor that at some point, the National Women's Suffrage Movement met in Grand Rapids. No dates were given. There seemed not to be easy information. There was no Google. There was precious little attention having been paid to Grand Rapids women. In fact, nationally, women's history really only started being done in the 1970s. So I kept pursuing this. Mm-hmm. There were historical newspapers online, not quite yet. There were databases in some libraries. In any case, at some point, I learned her name, and I found the date. So I got out pieces of information about this woman named Emily Burton Ketchum. I learned a whole lot more than about the national meeting here in 1899. The entire nation's movement came to Grand Rapids, the only time in Michigan. Their names were in the papers. That's when I really started microfilming newspaper research and discovered how huge this was.
Was this a national convention?
Absolutely. They had annual conventions. Wow. And they moved to places where they thought they might have a national effect. It was all Emily Burton Ketchum. By 1899, she had not only state connections. During the 1990s, well, maybe the late 80s, she was the president of the State Suffrage Association four times. There were at least that many meetings, state meetings, in Grand Rapids over those years. And by the end of the decade, she was sitting on the National Council. We have a wonderful picture of her sitting with Susan B. Anthony and all of the national leaders as the national leading group. So she had great range, if you want to call that power, but she had vision and executive ability. She was effective in what she did. And in 1890, the National Women's Congress met in Grand Rapids, another national meeting. So women were having to get together. They had to travel to communicate with each other, and they wrote letters all the time. And at age 69, Emily Burton Ketchum died at her desk writing letters.
Wow. We'll get back, and I want to get back to that.
A lot of that.
Yes.
So anyway, during the 1890s then, Grand Rapids women were really coming on board.
You've said before that getting the vote was seen as an umbrella, also representing many more specific issues to women. You want to expand on that?
Yep. That first American Rights Women's Rights Conference in 1848, Seneca Falls, had nothing to do with the vote. It had to do with married women wanting some control over their inherited property. It all went to their husbands if they were married. They had no control over what happened to their children, custody, if a marriage broke up, or any real say about their children, even within the marriage. Those are just two examples. They couldn't control their funds. They couldn't control what happened with their children. Those were the sorts of issues that were more important to women then. By the end of that conference, though, which Frederick Douglass attended, by the way, he lived in nearby Rochester, they had signed a state declaration of sentiments for women's suffrage. The idea being that if women could vote, they would have more political power to have effect on all of these other issues and problems, because men were controlling their personal lives, their political lives, their marriages, etc. And there was just a movement that the United States was part of. We're celebrating a 250th anniversary of the nation this year, and it was supposed to be all about freedom. And where were women in that? So those questions were big and were being answered. Quick corollary to that, women's clubs, the women's club movement, started in the mid-19th century. In Grand Rapids, after the Civil War, there was a history study club begun where women brought their own chairs, I think, to the basement of Park Congregational Church and decided that it was hard for them to get educations. So they were kind of self-educating groups, like early reading clubs, if you will. The Ladies Literary Club in Grand Rapids was built, I believe, in 1883, was one of the first in the nation. Women were building their own buildings to meet in, to have parlors outside their homes, to increase their range of contact with different numbers of women. And they were self-educating, which meant they were getting more information about the world out there. They were coming together, putting their power together, lobbying, making lobbying efforts. And even before all that, women were instrumental as community builders, creating schools in Grand Rapids, just to keep the example local, hospitals. Everything. Women were involved in every sense. And it's heartbreaking that they were in the newspapers. What they were doing was in the newspapers. It was not what they were doing, did not make it from the newspapers to the history books. So they were completely forgotten and uncredited. And we're still working on that.
Thank you for that. Talk to me a little bit, before I go back to Ketchum dying at her desk, the Burton name. We have a Burton Avenue, we have other. Tell me the importance of her.
Barney Burton, who was Emily Burton's uncle, married one of the Guild daughters. Joel Guild had a bunch of daughters and lived, there's a famous picture of his cabin along the river, one of the earliest settlers in this European settlers in this area. His brother, Josiah Burton, was married and had children, including Emily. And they had farmland over next to John Ball's farmland. So their land, their property, was right next to John Ball Zoo. Barney Burton's property was down in what's known as Burton Heights today. So the Burtons were among the earliest settlers here. And how I found more information and got a lot of it into the archives at the Grand Rapids Public Library is crazy. You know, I learned certain things about Emily Burton Ketchum as a suffragist in this tremendous meeting in Grand Rapids. But I couldn't find any paper trail. A friend took me to the genealogical library, the History of Michigan Library, or the Library of Michigan, and we found a book on Burton family, which went back to Vermont, early settlers, and there she was. Not she, her father was a baby when this was published in, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. She was born. She was in it. It was her grandson whose name was published in this book in the 1920s.
Okay, that makes sense.
I came home with names. Oh. I looked in the phone book and found the right name under Burton and took a flyer and left a phone mail message. The man whose phone it was the brother of Esther Ketchum Visser, who called me back. They were in the process of closing out their family home, their parents' home, and their father had always tried to tell them how important this forebear was, Emily Burton Ketchum, and they really weren't that interested. But it turned out, I got together with them in a cold house the next week, and they brought out family scrapbooks, photo albums, letters. It was astonishing. And much of this material, including Emily Burton's the letters and the scrapbook, can be found in the archive of the Grand Rapids Public Library. So we learned a whole lot about her and them. They lived on, she and her husband continued to live on a fragment of the property of what used to be the farm over next to the John Ball Farm and near the zoo. So deep, deep connections in Grand Rapids. And there were few descendants. And all of them, the greater great-great-great-grandchildren I met and have been part of programming here.
Wow.
And donated those materials.
Yes. Wow. Taking us back. In 1907, you say Ketchum died at her desk 1 year after the loss of Susan B. Anthony. Tie this for me.
Yeah. Well, we can't get into the history of suffrage too much here, but when Ketchum came back to Grand Rapids in 1867, there was there was ferment in Michigan, and there was a big movement in the early 1870s in the legislature to grant women state suffrage. She was part of that. I found her name on a committee. Now, she had a young child, but nevertheless, she keeps popping up. And about every decade, around the mid-70s, the mid-80s, there were different suffrage organizations that would organize and then kind of peter out because they weren't getting anywhere. And so finally, around 1890, she was in full throttle. And her son was older, and she was the dynamo who really organized Grand Rapids, took advantage of all of those women's clubs out there. Mm-hmm. There were Polish women's clubs, Jewish women's clubs, African-American women's clubs. A lot of these weren't formed until the 80s and 90s. But all of these women coming together, and she was harnessing kinds of power. So the only way these women could connect was through their desks, through letters, telegrams occasionally. But Emily Burton Ketchum she wore herself out. She died at 69. 8 years after the 1899 suffrage convention in Grand Rapids. But she went to a big campaign in California when it looked like California might roll.
Think about just getting to California Grand Rapids.
Yeah. We have her carpet bag, which I think, if the library doesn't have it, it's now in the public museum. She was in the Boston as a suffrage seminar, She hosted Susan B. Anthony in her home. Anthony made repeated visits here because Michigan was seen as a kind of linchpin state between the Western states, which had enfranchised their women much earlier, and the hidebound East Coast, which just wasn't budging, which is one reason in 1899 they would have come here. She was, anyway. What did you ask me?
I think you answered it, and we're impressed with your with you. I guess coming to the close of our conversation, the movement that she was responsible for. How did the movement carry on in Grand Rapids and Michigan?
Right.
Here we are, many years later.
I know. I started telling you about the ups and downs of the suffrage movement. And Susan B. Anthony died in 1906, and people were pretty demoralized and disillusioned. Emily Burton Ketchum died in 1907.
1 year later.
And had national attention. Here's one quote from the Women's Tribune of Portland, Oregon. Ketchum was one of the charter members of the Michigan State Suffrage Association and its president for several years. But whether president or private, her fealty, her energy, her executive ability always made her a mainstay of her coadjutors. So she had been bringing women in and training them. When she died in 1907, there were already women in place who could carry on. The next big jolt of energy was in 1910. And the movement in the 90s and earlier in the 19th century was quite decorous. In 1899, the stage at St. Cecilia was set up like a parlor. There was a piano, there were interludes. Susan B. Anthony held court at a desk center stage, was filled with flowers and celebrations and reports from states. By 1910, Grand Rapids had one of the very first suffrage parade floats in the nation. There were 75 women in bunting-laden cars following. So it got much more showy as we got into the 20th century. And these women were picking up the mantle and taking over. Grand Rapids women in 1916 took over the Grand Rapids Press for a special issue day. Of course, there were women journalists on the press and working with that. So they were active. And in fact, if you go to the Greater Grand Rapids Women's History Council's website and click on a suffrage link, there is a fabulous page on the history of Michigan suffrage with the Grand Rapids local angle. West Michigan was the heart of it. It was not Detroit, as is usually assumed. It was Grand Rapids and then Kalamazoo, where most of the fervent early progressive women's action took place. And it's not been remembered in the histories, even written about every decade, a dissertation throughout the 20th century. So you'll find a lot of information there and what these women were doing. And they, at the same time, there were women running for office, because that was part of the point of this. Mm-hmm. in mid-1880s, Grand Rapids finally got about getting a charter from the state legislature to let its women vote in school board elections. In 1886, a couple of women ran, didn't win. In 1887, Harriet Cook ran and won. So at the same time, they were doing all of this work for overall suffrage, for universal suffrage. They were running women. And there was a woman in the on the school board ever after that. In 1899, there were three Grand Rapids women on the school board. So that also was gaining steam. So you can see how all these forces coming together, and they culminate in World War I, when women, using the suffrage movement networks to some extent, but women were given a federal mandate to help with the war effort. And they engaged and probably got U.S. national suffrage as a result of it. Wow. That said, one bit about Michigan. Michigan women were fully enfranchised in 1918, 2 years before the National Suffrage Amendment.
Back to Emily Burton Ketchum with two final questions. If you had an hour to spend with Emily in present day, what would you do?
You know, I would want to talk about her, the personal professional blend of her work. When Susan B. Anthony was in town, she stayed with her most of the time. For the Ketchum's 25th wedding anniversary in, I think, 1892, Susan B. Anthony made a special trip, stood in a reception line, brought silver engraved spoons, which are either in the library or the museum now, and they were written up in the society pages. Susan B. Anthony wore brown silk, you know, with whatever. And when Emily Burton Ketchum was in Lansing, up in the gallery where women could watch legislation, she was written up as wearing, she was a bit of a fashion plate, dusky rose ensemble with a matching reticule. This woman, however, who had a sense of fashion, was up there, and when she was interviewed afterwards, she said, well, we're not lobbyists, because that was painting women with a black brush, I guess. She said, but we're here talking to our legislators. We want action. And from the gallery, I'd like to turn a Gatling gun on all the men who vote against us. She was bold. She was a bit flamboyant from time to time. She got things done, and you can just see that side of her. And in the 1990s, you, Shelley, might remember with me, there were women in the professions talks, like a woman who worked in labor, in construction, whatever. Well, Emily Burton Ketchum was hosting things in her home and at the Ladies Literary Club and all over the place. But in her home, she had a Women in the Professions night. A very early attorney, Elizabeth Eaglesfield, spoke there, and, you know, inspiring other people and younger women. One of those physicians in Grand Rapids spoke. So they were women professionals who had educations, who were showing what could be done. There was so much more that she was doing.
Mm. Nice. Final question. Why keep women's history alive? This is a no-brainer to you.
Well, I want to point out again that these women, who, if you go to historical newspapers, they are all over the newspapers. In 1899, every word of most of the speeches were printed. They were not unknown. They were big movers and shakers in their communities. And then Dwight Goss, whose wife was a president of the Ladies Literary Club, huge in suffrage, and he was a suffrage supporter himself, wrote a history of the city of Grand Rapids, mostly business. And the 1899 national gathering gets a single line in a summary paragraph about 1899 Grand Rapids. Men just didn't think what women did, it was like women's work, was worth preserving. So they were all forgotten, and that's partly what second wave feminism has been about, and we are still recovering them. This work is not done by a long shot. And that continuity of work, that what we think of today, you know, child care, whatever, comes straight out of those women's groups throughout the 19th century, which took on the vote as an umbrella for itself, but then affected during World War I food safety, I think 30 or 40% of the men drafted for World War I were malnourished. They failed their physicals. So food production and safety, children, weighing and measuring children were things that women had talked about for years. They finally were doing some of it as a national security measure, protecting women in industry. All of those ideas got more traction because of the federal mandate, developed into home economics programs in colleges and universities, into the 1930s, Frances Perkins taking on all these measures for this, for children's benefits. And we have continued. They planted so many seeds that continue to affect us today. So continuing to remember them is both inspiring to keep acting, to give them proper credit, and to, come up with other ideas they had that we've forgotten.
What's the best resource for more information on Emily Burton Ketchum and more?
Well, I've mentioned the archive in the Greater Grand Rapids, or the public library, and you can search her, put her name in a search tool and find her there and go in and visit physical objects. The Greater Grand Rapids Women's History Council's website is ggrwhc.org. Click on the suffrage link and bring up a lot of history that involves Ketchum and the women working with her. Click on the Women Who Ran link for a history of women's electoral history. That's another project that we worked on. We documented every single woman who ran, at least in the city of Grand Rapids, between that first win for school board in 1887 and Eva McCall Hamilton's win in the state senate in 1920. She could run in 1920. Because women in Michigan were enfranchised in 1918. Otherwise, the enfranchisement nationally in August would have been too late for them to be in primaries. But every time a woman could run for something, she did. So they're great models for us. We just don't know a tenth of it.
You have given us more than a tenth of your knowledge and your dedication. Thank you very much for this conversation about Emily Burton Ketchum. You, Joellen Clary, thank you.
Thanks, Shelley.
Powerful Women Let's Talk is a production of WGVU Public Media. Episodes available at wgvunews.org and on Apple and Spotify. Please like and subscribe.